It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Thank you so much for joining us. You are a treasured listening audience. Take care of yourself today. Heart, soul, mind, body. Strive for excellence. And I do appreciate you joining us. It is Thanksgiving week. There's a lot to be grateful for. We certainly have challenges out there. But we get to get up each day and we get to face those challenges. So happy Monday. How you doing, Producer Steve?
Well, it's Thanksgiving week. I guess you've already made mention of that. And my head's kind of spinning how we got here so quickly.
2020, it was a long year and a short year so far.
Yeah, there's all kinds of disparaging things I could say, but we're going to take the high road.
We are going to take the high road. We have a great week planned for you this week. Some special shows, special guests in these segments, and we've really been working hard on this, so I hope that you will enjoy that. Today's guest is Dr. Elizabeth Eastman. She is the Senior Scholar in Residence at the Benson Center for the Study of Western Civilization at CU Boulder. And we'll be talking about the great books. And when I talk about at the end of the show, read great books, there certainly we like to read things for pleasure. But on the other hand, there is a lot of junk out there. And sometimes people think that if it is in written form, then it is fact. And that is not the case. And that's why I say at the end of the show, Producer Steve, read great books, because we only have a certain number of hours in the day. And we choose how we spend those day and those hours, those minutes, and make it count.
Yeah, I stop and think. My credo, if that's the right word, has become, or my observation of our current time is that we live, and certainly the recent election bore this out. We live in a time where people have given up being informed for being entertained. Mm-hmm. And you said, yeah, we read for entertainment. I wish that were true of a lot more people. At least they wouldn't be absorbing all the baloney that is, you know, basically infiltrating our culture and keeping people from being truly informed.
Well, and you can be truly informed. You just have to search out a bit more. That's why we do this radio show. And we do this every morning, 6 to 7 a.m., Monday through Friday. It's replayed 1 to 2 p.m. and 10 to 11 p.m. And people can also pick it up on 100.7 FM. I'm going to make a point of that on a more regular basis, Producer Steve.
Well, along with that goes the mindset about deliberately being an informed citizen. The word homework conjures up a lot of, you know, bad memories for people when once they got out of high school, once they got out of college, no more homework. But I think there is a certain amount of homework that needs to be done to be a responsible citizen. What do you think?
Most definitely. It's called civic duty, civic responsibility. And I think people have taken our freedom for granted. They have taken the blessings of the American idea for granted. And if you do that and don't understand what has occurred to get us to this point, we are at risk of losing that. And that is why we need to understand it. We need to have intellectual curiosity. I am somewhat astounded, Steve, where people who I like, I respect, they're quote-unquote highly educated, but I don't. We never have a conversation where there's real intellectual curiosity. It's more of a kind of their mind is closed. And I find that distressing, because in order for us to grow as people and for us to grow as a society, we need to be continually searching. And that's the place where the great books, that's where it is. And we're going to be talking with Elizabeth about that in the second, third, and fourth segment.
Well, there is no doubt there is value in the great books, because it, especially if it's a history type, a history related book, that, how many times have we heard it? Those who don't learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. And there is no greater investment in reading things like that.
Well, and that is why we do this show. That's why we encourage you to read great books. Before we get into our quote for today, I'm very grateful, again, for this team that I get to work with, and that is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And I am very thankful for all you listeners, for Crawford Broadcasting. And as we're looking at things with gratitude this Thanksgiving week, just wanted to mention that. Our quote for today, I went to Socrates. And I think you're going to find this very interesting, Steve. Socrates was a Greek philosopher from Athens who is credited as one of the founders of Western philosophy and as being the first moral philosopher of the Western ethical tradition of thought. An enigmatic figure, he authored no texts and is known chiefly through the accounts of classical writers composing after his lifetime, particularly his students Plato and Xenophon. He was born in 470 BC. He died in 399 BC. Okay, here's the quote. Most people, including ourselves, live in a world of relative ignorance. We are even comfortable with that ignorance because it is all we know. When we first start facing truth, the process may be frightening, and many people run back to their old lives. But if you continue to seek truth, you will eventually be able to handle it better. In fact, you want more. It's true that many people around you now may think you're weird or even a danger to society, but you don't care. Once you've tasted the truth, you won't ever want to go back to being ignorant. What's your thoughts on that, Steve?
You know, before we went on the air and you said, hey, I got some quotes of Socrates, my mind, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, we're going deep now. but okay, in the time that he wrote those words down, it was essentially an observation, an opinion of what he saw. This much, these centuries later, it is become the truth. And it discourages me to a degree, only because right around the turn of the century or the millennium, I was, you know, the senior pastor that I was, of the staff that I was working on, he was very wary of what was coming around the corner in terms of New Age thinking. And those guys, they really muddied the waters, because now they said, well, not just truth, but your truth versus my truth. And boy, did that open up a can of worms.
Well, it really has. And what it was doing, it was chipping away at the foundational principles that have built the American idea, the Judeo-Christian values that have made us this big melting pot of all kinds of different people and different races and different religions, because actually, if you look at it, it is the most tolerant society out there, because it's based on this idea that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I chose the Socrates quote, though, because way back then, this was before Christ, he's talking about a society that lives in a world of relative ignorance. And so this is not a new battle for us, Steve. I know we talk about it all the time. It is a continual battle, and it's a battle that each generation needs to step up. I call it the battle of ideas. You need to get your brain around the things that, these foundational things of the American idea, be very grateful for them, and possibly be prepared to have a conversation about it at the Thanksgiving table.
Well, I think human nature, I'd like to think, is, maybe it's just the way my mind works, humans in terms of a computer. You know, we have a CPU, our mind, our brain. We have memory. But when it comes to human nature, and this will be, you know, familiar, because ever since Windows came out in 95, we had Windows 95 and Windows 97. And, you know, your operating system is measured in numbers, 1.0, 1, 1.1.2 or something. Human nature is still running on its original platform, 1.0. It has not changed.
And it won't, because that is the constant that is out there. But excited to talk with Elizabeth Eastman. We'll do that in the next segment. Before we do that, though, this is very interesting times for our small businesses, and we need to support them. Hooters Restaurants is one of my great partners. Next Saturday is Small Business Saturday. Stop by, pick up something to go, take it home. And there are five locations, and they are, let's see, I should have them memorized. They're Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. Go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That is HootersColorado.com. We will be right back with Elizabeth Eastman.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests as well as our most recent podcasts. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And we'd appreciate it if you'd go over to Facebook and give us a like. It is Thanksgiving week. There is so much to be grateful for. And I am so thrilled to have on the line with me Elizabeth Eastman. And she has a PhD in political science from Claremont Graduate School, a master's in liberal education from St. John's Graduate Institute, and a bachelor's with honors in modern French civilization. And she is the senior scholar in residence at the Benson Center this year at CU Boulder. Elizabeth Eastman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kim, for having me. It's truly my pleasure to join you this morning.
First question. I noticed that you have a master's in liberal education, and many people think that education is getting too liberal. Explain that to us, Elizabeth.
Well, that's a good place to start because I think if I had to offer just one formative experience that connected all of the education that I've had, in the classroom primarily, but outside as well, that's the notion of understanding exactly what we're talking about. And it comes to probably one of the most important figures in the history of philosophy and the history of political philosophy, and that's Socrates. Now, Socrates, many of your listeners will know, dates back to Athens. He lived in Athens. He lived to the age of 70 in Athens. And what he's most famous for is asking what is questions. So, you know, what is justice? What is courage? What is virtue? And he would certainly ask the question, well, what is liberal? What is illiberal? What is liberalism? What is liberal education? And we find that, when we start with that, what is a seemingly simple question, what is, can just start a tremendous dialogue. Because imagine yourself sitting around a seminar table with, it could be five people, it could be 15 people, and there's a what is question. If you have five people, start out with five different answers. And then, let's examine those answers. Well, can you say just a little bit more about, what you're thinking, your response is to the what is question. And somebody will jump in and say, I agree up until a point, but then I verge in this direction, and I think we should add this point. So you can see how that truly is a start of it's a good starting point, because everybody at the table can offer something. So that's where we are. That's where we start.
Elizabeth, as you were talking about this, I'm thinking of this big what is question, and I think it was Pontius Pilate when he said, what is truth? I mean, that is a huge what is question. What's your comments on that?
let's see, how much time do we have? So what is truth? Well, in fact, that's a good question, because somebody could offer the answer, well, you know, is there truth, or do we simply have different versions of the truth? And then you're said, boy, then you've really got a discussion going. And so, you know, when you think in terms of truth, you can think of something, you know, whether it's a definition or a belief, an opinion that we may hold, that we want to hold up to examination. And if we talk in terms of, and I'll say a truth, we can talk about something that has been examined and discussed and maybe revised over time, or maybe revised, but in the sense of, you know, making a finer point to it. Now, you're going to have disagreements because different things can inform the truth. You know, are we going to talk about philosophy? Are we going to talk about science? Are we going to talk about religion, of course? But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, let's go back to Socrates for a moment. He didn't always arrive at an answer to the what is question. Sometimes he did arrive at it. Other times it was, well, you know, we'll just keep talking about it. And I think one of the problems that we have today, one of the biggest problems, not only in education, in the academy, but outside, is we've stopped talking. It's like many people just put their feet in cement and refuse to move. And once you stop the dialogue, then that's when our real problems begin.
Well, and there seems like there's been pressure to tap down voices. And I'm, again, paraphrasing something in my mind that I think that I read about C.S. Lewis. And he said that if you're in a discussion and you get two or three questions in and you cannot defend your premise, defend your idea, at that point, you may want to examine your premise. What's your thoughts on that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, you know, self-examination absolutely is part of this. And gosh, for whatever reason, Socrates is my touchstone today. He actually says in one of his dialogues, it's in the apology in the sense of defending himself, not acting, you know, asking for you know, extending a position from sorrow. But when he was defending himself, he was put on trial in Athens on various charges. And one of the lines that comes out in his defense is, the unexamined life is not worth living.
Ooh.
And he is, yeah, very, very powerful statement. My understanding of the statement is that examination takes place within. I'm responsible to examine my own positions, my own opinions, my own beliefs, my own truths that guide my life. But at the same time, you know, my fellow human being, my fellow citizen should as well engage in that type of examination. So the what is question can provoke, because I can, again, imagine sitting on a seminar table and somebody says something and I can kind of hit my forehead and say, oh, I never thought about it that way. I need to think about that. And that's, you know, that's where the richness comes in. That's where the, you know, where we continue to be a people that is, it's vibrant.
Elizabeth Eastman, my understanding that has been that in many of the higher education institutions in America, that there's been a teaching of victimization, and there's no way that you can have victimization and self-examination at the same time. I just don't see how those two things could match up. Your thoughts?
Well, and that's one of the real problems in our educational system today. When we stop the inquiry, and the inquiries are stopped for a whole variety of reasons, but when we stop the inquiry, that's when we lose the vibrancy that I was mentioning. And when you have folks, you know, in the academy, they could be the teachers, the professors, or the administrators who have an agenda. Well, that's when you start getting into some real problems, and I think it can explain certainly a lot of the problems that we have today. Somebody who's decided that they are going to advance a particular, and let's take the example of Marx. Let's take, you know, this whole socialism debate. Well, debate. I say debate. I'd love to have a debate.
Yes.
these socialist views, you know, when you have those individuals who say this and only this, then you're going to then you're walking into the wall, because then free inquiry is no longer permitted. I will never tell a student, don't read Marx or don't read, you know, X, Y, or Z. I will say, read it, think about it, and see if you can not only understand them, but then, you know, defend them or criticize them. And then, you know, once you take that work, read a second work that maybe counters it, so that you can see you're introduced to the whole realm of different ideas. And I always tell my students, I'm never going to tell you what to think. I'm only going to encourage you to think. And so you lay it out.
Oh, Elizabeth Eastman, that is really what education is for. So important. We're going to go to break. I am talking with Elizabeth Eastman, and she is the senior scholar in residence at the Benson Center at CU Boulder this year. And so we're going to go to a break. And on the line with me is Jason McBride, senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. And Jason McBride and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management are great partners of the Kim Munson Show. As we're coming into Thanksgiving week, I am very grateful for your partnership, Jason McBride.
Well, I am grateful for yours too, Kim, and I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. It's coming up in just a few days, and I know I plan to gather with my family, no matter how many there may be, and really enjoy the holiday.
That is what it's supposed to be all about, and there is a lot to be grateful for, even though it's been such a crazy year. Jason, as we're coming in, though, on the end of the year, and I always say when opportunity knocks, answer the door. And the stock market, there's always volatility, but it's up here at these highs. And it might behoove people, and we're not giving advice, but it might behoove people to take some of those profits and put them into more of an income-producing investment. What's your thoughts on that, Jason?
Well, I think that can be a smart idea for some people, Kim, especially if you look at your portfolio and you've got, you know, 90, 100% of it all exposed to stock market or other investments, you know, that do have risk that they could lose value. And, Kim, I know people have, gotten somewhat of a bad idea about the word annuity, and I think they've gotten somewhat of a bad rap. But if you understand why you're using it, an annuity can be a wonderful way to create that income. And this is an example just of one company that's out there. If you were 60 years old today, Kim, and let's say you put $100,000 of your money into this contract, when you're 70, 10 years from now, you know, it would guarantee you almost $12,000 a year in income for the rest of your life, as long as you live. And then as kind of a bonus, if you were to get sick, they'll double your income to almost $24,000 for up to 5 years. And, you know, people worry about, like, the cost of long-term care, home health care. This is just kind of a little extra kicker that's built in. But again, to think about it, if you had $100,000 right now, how could you comfortably guarantee you're going to get $12,000 a year forever from it without the risk of possibly losing principal, the risk of not being able to have that income? And so, yeah, I just think that you can use these things for part of your money to gain a little bit of certainty and to kind of create a do-it-yourself pension.
It seems to make a lot of sense. And again, with the market has been hitting new highs, it seems to me to make some sense and take a portion of those profits and put them into something more defensive. And this seems to make a lot of sense. Jason, it is now, we're coming in on the end of the year. This is a good time for people to do a discovery session with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management.
Yep, and we are open for business, Kim. We are considered an essential business, which is great. So we've been available through this whole mess. If you need to come in and see us, you're welcome to come to the office. We do take precautions and all that, but, it's hard to do business over the phone with someone new, it's nice to be able to sit down face-to-face, which you are able to do with one of our fine advisors.
Well, and Jason McBride, it makes a lot of sense. People can reach you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or can go to our landing page together, which is Air Presidential. That is AIRpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great day, Kim.
And we'll be right back with Elizabeth Eastman.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving. There is so much to be grateful for. We live in the United States of America, land of the free, home of the brave. We want to keep it that way for sure. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And be sure and go over to Facebook, give us a like. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Elizabeth Eastman. She is the senior scholar in residence at the Benson Center here at CU Boulder. And she received her PhD in political science from Claremont Graduate School, a master's in liberal education from St. John's Graduate Institute, and a bachelor's with honors in modern French civilization. Just great to have you on the line, Elizabeth, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Well, thank you very much. We're looking forward to a wonderful family celebration.
For sure. These are the things we really treasure. I look back last year at Thanksgiving, never would have dreamed that many of the things that I took for granted are kind of in question this year. And it's been a real gut check for me, Elizabeth.
Yeah. We have to keep looking for the silver linings in all of this.
Well, one of the silver linings, a great conversation in the previous segment about Socrates, that education goes back to the what is questions and self-examination, self-reflection. But you're talking about the great books, the importance of the great books. I think every student should read them, but I realize I don't really know what they are exactly, Elizabeth. Which ones are the great books?
Well, we can talk about great books in two senses. First of all, we can contrast it with good books and think of all the good books that you've read. It may have been a novel, it may have been a work of history, it could even be something related to science. And whether it's long or short, you'll walk away from it and say, wow, that was really a good book, or that was a good reading. Contrast that with something that we deem great, which has become such a controversial word now.
Yeah.
But the idea of great, it kind of kicks it up a notch, Emerald, the chef on TV. Let's kick it up a notch and let's figure out, why do certain, books or, it can be poems, it can be treatises, letters. Why can we call those things great? And I think we can arrive at agreement on whether something is great. And I'll introduce the word, it's timeless. It doesn't matter that Socrates was walking the streets of Athens, three or four centuries before Christ. It doesn't matter that, maybe John Locke, who wrote some very important treatises that were influential on our founders, lived in the 1600s in England. We're able to take these writings and take them out of their particular setting and put them in a universal setting. And what that means is that these writings contain ideas or themes or questions that speak to us on the level of human being. And once it speaks to us on the level of human being, then we can take those great ideas and apply them to our particular situation, like apply them to being an American citizen, or apply them to being, you know, say, a Christian or a Jew, or apply them to, you know, my youth spoke to me, you know, at the age of 17 when I read, you know, my first platonic dialogue in a senior high school class. Or it can speak to me, you know, at the age of 60 when I'm standing in front of my students teaching Lincoln. I'm teaching a seminar on Lincoln. So that's one meaning of the word great books. We can just distinguish them based on their content. In the 1940s, the great books with a capital G and a capital B took on kind of a new posture. There were two professors from the University of Chicago back in the 1940s who decided, you know, or, you know, in conversation, thought it would be good if we could catalog, you know, a set of great books. And you mentioned that I have my master's degree from St. John's. St. John's College has two campuses, one in Annapolis, Maryland, and one in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And there was this failing college in Annapolis, Maryland, that was actually bought out by this group that was headed up by these professors. I don't know. I may be a little fuzzy on the details. But they implemented what's known as the Great Books Program, and it was tied to what they were doing in at the University of Chicago. And to this day, the St. John's College, which now has a second campus in Santa Fe, still offers a liberal arts curriculum, or you can also call it a Great Books curriculum, both an undergraduate program, and then they subsequently instituted a master's program, so I have my master's from them. But then they've also done something very interesting. They've added a second master's program, the one master's program in Western works. They've offered a second master's program in Eastern classics, which makes for a very good addition to the notion that there are great books, that there's not solely within the Western tradition, but within the Eastern tradition, we too can find books that are just as timeless, just as, you know, rich in adding to the conversation. So that's kind of the two spheres of how we can understand the great books. Now, what the folks did out of Chicago is you can search them. I think they now have the Great Books Foundation. They came out with another program called the Junior Great Books, so that, you know, it may not be as young as K, but K through 12 access, you know, when it was age appropriate, introducing, again, timeless works, you know, that were more accessible to a younger set of students. And again, just the same idea. Let's talk about these important ideas, or let's talk about these themes and you know, really bring a richness to one's education that's not necessarily tied to rote learning, which I absolutely will defend rote learning. There's a place for it. But, you know, it's kind of, if we go back to the idea, the original idea of the world liberal, it's framed. Freeing the mind. And you actually started talking about liberal education at the very beginning. You know, contrast that with manual education, where you use your hands to manufacture something or to fashion something. What the Greeks implemented was, well, let's have a complement to the manual education, and it's called liberal education. And it's aimed toward freeing the mind, or making the mind, you know, much more expansive in terms of experiences. And that experience can take place sitting, you know, on your couch or sitting at a chair at a table with other folks, because the words on the page can, you know, just absolutely transport us. So sometimes you'll hear the word transcend. It means that it cuts across time and place, manner, et cetera.
Speaking of education, my grandmother, I'm from Western Kansas, and my grandmother, my understanding is that she had, quote unquote, an eighth grade education, which, as I now look back at, she was a very wise woman. She was very well read. Yeah. And an eighth grade graduation at those little schoolhouses out on the prairie was quite an education. My father has a high school education, a farmer. But as I would ride around with him as we were doing work, he would be quoting Shakespeare. And I realized he got quite an education in that little town back on the plains of Western Kansas. And I think it was a great liberal education, Elizabeth Eastman.
Yeah, I think so. You know, there are, if you go back to, you know, those folks who look back to the 1800s and such, Marvin and Knott, the two books that were in the majority of the homes, one was the Bible and one was Shakespeare's collected works. That's a pretty good foundation for education. I'll take that any day. But no, they, you know, you're absolutely right. We've really gotten, you know, kind of bollocked up in our notion of what education is. And, you know, we seem to think that, you know, it's this list of degrees and this list of letters at the end of our names. And, you know, I'm not going to discount that because, you know, when you think of our advances in science and mathematics and even you know, our advances in, you know, recounting history and political science and such, I'm not going to discount it. But we'd be going on the wrong track if we think that that's the only form of education that is, you know, that is worthy or that somehow distinguishes something. Because I think, you know, your grandmother is right up there with them. And much of that comes from, I think, understanding what wisdom is. You know, what makes a person wise? Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
And, you know, we don't talk about wisdom that much in our society, to be wise, to search for. Well, and I think truth and wisdom and clarity, I think all those things are very closely connected, Elizabeth.
Yes, yes, most definitely. And it can come from a book, regardless of, you know, like and I'm one to stress a variety of content. It can be, like I say, it can be a novel, it can be a nonfiction work, it can be a poem, it can be a song even. Even a song, the lyrics of a song can, you know, transmit, you know, ideas and themes and such that can be truly, you know, significant and deep. But at the same time, the wisdom also, you don't talk about a young person being wise, or very, very rarely. We just don't think of it in those terms. But we do talk about, you know, those folks have, and to put it most simply, they've been around the block a few times. And so the observation that they make of other human beings, of other, you know, of character, of behavior, and from those observations, they can, acquire a different sort of knowledge. So book learning is one type of knowledge, but very much living in experience is another that shouldn't be shortchanged by any stretch of the imagination.
Now, this is probably I'm going to be interested in your reaction to this. I when my daughter was going to college, we met a guy. He had graduated from that university, successful man, and actually I think played professional football. And he said that when he was headed off to college, his grandmother said, "Now don't let your book learning get in the way of your education." I thought, "Aha!" What's your thoughts on that, Elizabeth?
That's hilarious, and I'm going to remember that line now because it's so true. I'm right there with her, and quite honestly, I think that's what we're seeing today. That's some of the things that we're suffering in our educational system is that we are letting the wrong books influence too much. And like I say, hey, I want the whole array out there so that, you know, students are you know, exposed to a lot of different things. But no, I think what one way to understand this mother's or this grandmother's remark is that don't allow the books to close your mind. And I think that's one of the things, you know, if we're only going to read Marx, then doggone it, I'm going to say you are closing your mind. you want to read Marx? Well, why don't you have Milton Friedman for lunch and then see the debate that they're having between the two. And then maybe somebody else for dinner, you know?
I like that a lot. And that's really good advice. And I think a lot of parents need to take that advice. I know a lot of folks that have worked hard, paid good money to get their kids an education, and the kids come back and they're like, we don't relate on values anymore. And I think that's really important. Elizabeth, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, I want to give a shout out to one of my great partners, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado, and they have knives from the best blade makers, throughout the world. It is now it is Christmas time. It's Christmas shopping, and Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go to add in a great gift for that person that's hard to shop for. So check them out at castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. We'll return with Elizabeth Eastman and the great books.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. I am so excited to have on the line with me Elizabeth Eastman. She is the senior scholar in residence at the Benson Center here at CU Boulder this year. And we're talking about the great books. Great conversation we had in the preceding segments. What are the great books? What would you recommend that people go out and read now, Elizabeth Eastman?
Well, if you, it's not a short list, which is a good thing, because it can, cut across many different disciplines. You know, there are great books in literature and philosophy, science, et cetera. And, you know, boy, as far as a starting place, reading the Socrates and dialogues is not an easy thing to do. Socrates never wrote anything. It was his student Plato who wrote down the dialogues. You know, we have, you know, maybe some 40 dialogues. You know, maybe one of the very, very short ones, things that are maybe a dozen pages. You know, when I was in high school, this is really it's one of those turning points in my life. I had a high school teacher my senior year. It was an English class, an elective English class. And he taught us, he divided the semester into three parts: art, music, and literature. And in the literature, it was actually literature/philosophy, we read the Platonic dialogue that took up the question of piety. I couldn't even spell the word, let alone articulate any definition of piety. But it's a dialogue that's known by the main character's name, not an easy one to remember, Euthyphro. And so actually, if you want to look for this, you can just, do a search for what is piety, Plato, what is piety, Socrates. You know, it's a nice short little dialogue. It's probably going to get, people tied up in knots. There are a couple of others, but that just kind of gives you a taste or a flavor for it. You know, the next one in line, of course, would be Aristotle. You know, his politics is a little more difficult, but he wrote an entire work on ethics, and he raises some very important questions. And then, you can fast forward and look at, there are some very great Christian works. You might be familiar with Augustine's Confessions, where he's moving from a, fairly dissolute life to embracing Christianity. Aquinas, what Aquinas does, I'm Catholic, St. Thomas Aquinas, he asks questions as well, a little bit out of the, kind of the Socratic and Aristotelian vein. But, he's got questions on law, for example. And that's a wonderful inquiry into that. You know, works of literature, I think, 19th century British literature really has some wonderful, wonderful novels. One of my favorite is George Eliot. She's just a wonderful writer. She, and it is she, that was her pen name, George Eliot. She wrote this wonderful novel, and it's a long one. It's called Daniel Deronda. And it's following this figure, Daniel, this primary character. And he's it's actually one of the first works on Zionism. He's Jewish, and he's discovering his Jewish identity. And she's actually making the case for the State of Israel long before anybody even knew that this was an aspiration. The Virginians is another wonderful, wonderful novel. Poetry. Don't give poetry short shrift, because what the goal is more just to open the mind and to get you thinking. I'm teaching a seminar on Abraham Lincoln. You know, I'd pick up any of the Lincoln speeches. And one of the wonderful things about our phone is you can just type in Abraham Lincoln speeches audio. And there are a number of websites that will have an audio of somebody reading the speech, but they'll put the text of the speech on your screen. And it's really provocative. I'm going to be giving a Benson Center lecture in November, and once the lecture is complete, it will be on the Benson Center website. And I'm going to be talking about Lincoln's House Divided speech, because I think it very much parallels where we are today. The very deep divisions, like Lincoln lived through and was through his presidency, of a half-slave, half-free nation. I asked the question, what do we substitute for slave and free? Do we substitute, can we have half of the nation believing in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and the other half of the nation wanting to replace those documents? Lincoln asks the question, or actually he states, we could no longer remain a house divided. So, you can also move it forward into the, into the 20th century with, Freud. You know, Freud, for example, he absolutely revolutionized, this whole field of psychotherapy. Even if you don't, accept Freud or really convinced on him, just seeing him ask these questions, thinking about the world in a radically different way. Another kind of along the same vein, I don't know if you've ever come across the name Viktor Frankl, F-R-A-N-K-L.
Heard it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Man's Search for Meaning. He, too, was a psychotherapist prior to being sent to a concentration camp. He lost his parents and his wife in the camp. He survived, and much of the book revolves around the question, why did I survive? But not only why did I survive, but now that I, have overcome, this horrific experience, what do I do with my life? How can I give it meaning? And how can I bring meaning to those to those who didn't survive, make their life meaningful? So it's a very, very moving book. So, those are just a few thoughts off the top of my head, but again, emphasizing, the variety of literature, but as well, the other thing that I'd say to folks who are kind of delving into things that they've never read before is don't get discouraged. If, pick out, pages or paragraphs or, maybe a chapter, like, for example, jump into the middle of book one of Aristotle's Ethics. And, just take, even a paragraph or two or a few pages and open your mind that way. It's like, wow, I never really thought about ethics that way. Or, Plato, say you can't get through the whole dialogue. Well, see, just kind of look at the general outlines, because, you're not going to master this overnight. And especially if you're doing it on your own, you are, actually get a couple of friends. Why not read a Lincoln speech and have lunch?
Mm-hmm.
So what was Lincoln really getting at? Because I think conversation among friends or even at a dinner table with family members is really riveting. My son and I are currently reading the Bible. That one-year plan has turned into the three-year plan.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I readily admit. But, it doesn't matter, really, because the richness is just, it's never ending. It's, I'm actually just about to finish the book of Judith. I'd never read Judith before, but boy, does that give you a lot to think about.
It's so interesting that you would mention that, Elizabeth Eastman, because right around Easter this year, I completed reading the Bible and am starting again.
Oh, wonderful.
And I realized that I didn't, there's no way you get everything there, and you can read something and then read it again. And sometimes, like, I might be in Leviticus and I'm kind of like, I think I need to go rotate the tires on the car. I'm not paying as much attention as I, and I like, have to bring myself back so that I would really pay attention. But it was good for me to do that. And now I'm doing that again. And I was going to ask you about the Bible, if that was one. How about some others that are coming to me to mind? Is Shakespeare and a Victor Hugo and a C.S. Lewis. What do you think about those?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And that's the one thing about lists, is you never want to have the list limit. I see the list, you know, what these professors put out in the 1940s, I see the list as a starting point. And that's always an argument that's raised. It's like, well, wait a minute, you know, well, what about this book and what about that book? And my response is, well, nobody's saying that this is the be-all and end-all. When you propose adding a new book to, you know, this list that's out there at the Great Books Foundation, you have to ask yourself, well, you know, is this book really worthy? Why would I call this a great book? Which is another vehicle of inquiry into what the author is doing, and then holding up that author to compare. You know, one of the books that I enjoyed teaching with my students years ago was Achebe's, what's it called? I just had the title a minute ago. It was Things Fall Apart. And again, totally different culture, coming at the whole notion of community in a very different way, but it's a very provocative work. So no, it wasn't on the original list, I'm sure, back in the 1940s, but I think it's a valuable one now, most definitely.
Okay. Elizabeth, while we were talking, I did go to the Great Books Foundation, and I have to ask you a question. A little bit of my radar has gone up. I'm looking at some of these books, and I'm seeing a bit more of an agenda, something less timeless, and a little more agenda-driven. What's your thoughts on that? We've got about 3 minutes.
Let's see. Can you give me an example?
Now, I have not read it, but The Handmaid's Tale. I saw that as one of the books that came up, and my understanding is there's some agenda with that. So I'm just commenting kind of from what I know, just very peripherally.
Well, sure. And this is what I'm saying is, you're not going to find a list of books that's, you know, always going to veer in the direction where you think we should be heading, or where you would like to take yourself. That's one of the reasons why I insist on having my students read Marx. At the end of the day, I actually tell my students, you know, I am not a socialist. And the reason why I'm not a socialist and the reason why I'm not a Marx is precisely because I've studied this work. I know the direction that he's tending toward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, can this work be used well, or can this work be used in a way that's, you know, somewhat, I'll use the word subversive. And this is the problem is, this is one of the challenges, is taking an author's words and being true to that author. Or are we going to, you know, maybe use that author for our purposes, not our purposes, but for, you know, purposes that were never intended. You know, you're misinterpreting the words, or you're maybe only taking part of it. And, you know, it's been a little while, honestly, since I've looked at that list. Because I, you know, I kind of go back to what I was introduced to, you know, say back in
from the 40s,
70s, 80s, and 90s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when it was started in the 40s, but, you know, it's gone through some modifications. So no, there's always a dose of caution, but there's also, you know, some value in reading things that are, that can be used, I guess for lack of a better word, badly, or used for purposes that are not going to advance, you know, good means. So then you're really sharpening your reading skills and saying, wait a minute, where is this taking me?
That is for sure. Elizabeth, we're out of time. What's the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners this Thanksgiving week?
Oh, keep reading. just keep reading and invite others to read, invite others to discuss, because we, and you know, hey, if you want to, read on your phone, download a book, you know, get onto one of your public library websites and, you know, find something, or listen to audiobooks. I love audiobooks. Because, you know, I walk and I listen to books and it just, you know, it really engages me and it keeps me a little more fit.
There you go. There you go. Elizabeth Eastman, Senior Scholar in Residence at the Benson Center here at CU Boulder. Thank you so much. I wish a blessed Thanksgiving to you and your family. And thank you so much for joining the Kim Munson Show.
Thank you, Kim. It was a pleasure.
And Elizabeth Eastman says she does not write often, but when she does, you can find that at elizabetheastman.co, elizabetheastman.co. I'm sure that everything there is very rich in content. Our quote for today is from Socrates, very apropos for today. He says, today in America, he says, false words are not only evil in themselves, but they infect the soul with evil. My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.